Hey, March 23rd, 2005. This is the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development. We welcome you. Today we have invited testimony from Mr. Bill Carter with the Small Business Development Center. And we ask, Bill's already there, so take it away.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Your staff assistant is distributing a handout. I hope that doesn't scare away. I've only had.
Please also announce your name. Sorry, I shouldn't.
Mr. Chairman, members of the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development, other guests, good morning. For the record, I am Bill Carter. I'm the State Director for the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network. Also with me this morning is Victoria Pruitt of the Economic Development Department. She has some results from some survey research that we did on our services to provide this morning. And I believe Mr. Ron Fox is here this morning of the Economic Development Department. And if I could have the liberty, I'd like to introduce my mother, who I think is, her name is Vi Carter,
Mrs. Carter.
Back of me.
What I'm going to do with my son?
The statewide Small Business Development Center Network Office, which is my office, is located in Eugene, and there's also 19 service centers throughout Oregon, and these are hosted by Oregon community colleges and then three of our small public universities. These business assistance centers are commonly referred to as SBDCs. I'll try not to use the acronym, but it's quite common. There's actually 1,100 small business development centers, or SBDCs, around the United States. There's 66 networks like the one here in Oregon. We have always been known as one of the top three or four SBDC networks. I have been in this position for approximately 18 months. My predecessor, Sandy Cutler, started the network 22 years ago. The 20th center is the Small Business International Trade Office, which is located in Portland, but it provides statewide services, particularly with import and export issues for small businesses. In addition to our higher ed hosts, our funding partners are the Small Business Administration and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We do get some state funds. They are lottery funds. It's a grant for use for small business technical assistance. The lottery grant is a required match for the federal money. And I have provided a pie chart there so that you can see the approximate distribution of federal money, state money, and then local host money. Presently, the state for the 0305 million provided about 28% of our revenue sources. In addition, each of the SBDC service centers generate approximately $30,000 in tuition from the classes that they offer at the local level. They do provide, as mandated by federal law, the counseling is to be free to anyone that asks for it. The SBDCs also collaborate and partner with many other public and private organizations, with local, regional, statewide, federal agencies, with minority, women, veterans, Hispanic, and other special interest organizations, in our primary mission to assist small businesses to start, grow, and thrive in Oregon. That's our mission. I think everyone in this room, in fact, I'm often schooled when I visit you in your offices about the statistics. You know how important small businesses is to Oregon. Oregon's a small business state. There are 330,000 small businesses in Oregon. 98% of Oregon firms are small. 90% of Oregon firms have less than 20 employees. Over 51% of Oregon's private workforce is employed by an Oregon small business, and there's a host of of many other statistics that demonstrate just how significant small business is to our economy. They are the engines of the economy. Hector Barreto, administrator of the Small Business Administration, just last week, in testimony before Congress regarding our SBA funding, stated, following times of economic downturn, small businesses play a leading role in economic recovery, and it is small businesses that generate approximately two-thirds of all new private sector jobs. I've actually heard that figure up to three-quarters of all new private sector jobs. Across Oregon, a new small business, a business expansion, the addition of just a handful of new jobs, and certainly the invention of a new patented product is big news locally. But typically, it's not headline news for our major newspapers. Small business doesn't get the headlines. But these small businessmen and women, the veterans and the minority entrepreneurs, are Oregon's economic foundation. It's my view also that the innovators, there's a lot of talk about the innovation economy and how Oregon's economy is changing, but I believe the innovators and the entrepreneurs are already here, and they're already in business. They are the small business owners and employees that already work here, and I ask for your assistance in ensuring that Oregon's small business owners and entrepreneurs have a positive business climate and the resources, including the training, advising, and technical assistance that the SBDCs provide in order to help these small business people prosper. As was stated to me a couple of weeks ago, Oregon is a small business state, and it's not likely to change in the near future. The balance of the packet of information I have with you, and I hope that we can have a discussion about this, addresses three questions. They're probably the questions that you have on your mind. What are the SBDCs, or the Small Business Development Centers, doing to help small businesses? So we're going to look at what the needs are and what our services are briefly. And do these services make a difference to these businesses? So we have surveyed the small businesses that we have served year after year, and we'd like to present a summary of some of that information. And then finally, I've put together kind of my wish list, my recommendations of what I think we need to do if we are to keep this organization viable. And I'd like to have a little bit of discussion about that. So are there any questions at this point, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman?
Any questions? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Carter, is this a mandate that we've placed on colleges and universities to fund this program?
Absolutely not. They voluntarily are engaged in this program. It is a tremendous struggle, as you know, in education to fund non-core, you know, off-campus types of activities. So I'm in constant conversations with the presidents, with the local SBDC directors to have them maintain. I've actually gotten a couple of the community college to increase their local funding. The presidents know. I mean, when I ask them, I'll put the value question to them. I say, well, why do you have a small business development center? And they know that they need to be connected to their local Main Street. They also know, and they recite this back to me, that is one of the key doorways to their full academic programs and the other services that they have available for their constituents. So they get it. The problem is that when they do their budget reviews and they have vice presidents that look at which arm do I cut off, this one or this one, they're left with pretty difficult choices.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Dr. Carter. Two questions, if I could, and one, how is that funding formula put together? Who gives what? I'm curious. Is OHSU participate is one, and then I want to know how you become a service center and where these 19 are. But if they're not a mandate, who contributes the greatest portion of this $4 million? what colleges? Do you? Could we have a list of those who participate?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, I can certainly provide that. I can give you approximates now off the top of my head if you would like.
That's
that.
Okay. If you would just tell us who the biggest donor is, please. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. May I follow?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, the largest community college donor, and if you look at the pie chart that I provided there, the federal grant and the state grant are divided roughly into 19 slices, and they're equal.
But the other
portion is not equal, and is that your question?
Follow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I'm trying to find out is who gives you the greatest, what institution gives you the greatest portion of the $4 million here? Colleges and universities, it says 48% on page one.
Yes.
And so who is the largest university donor? Who's the largest community college donor?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, the question is difficult because that money does not come to the network office. They provide that directly to their SBDCs. So although I see reports of each local host institution's contributions to their SBDC program, it's not money that I manage. Mm-hmm. I manage the two grants, the state grant and the federal grant. I can tell you that the average is about $130,000. The minimum is $15,000. There's two colleges that are at the minimum, is my recollection, and that the biggest host contributor to the program, although it doesn't come directly to my office, is Lane Community College. Chemeketa has a very strong program. PCC has a strong program as well.
Mr. Chair, if I could, thank you. Dr. Carter, could you give us that list, please?
Absolutely.
Is that possible? And then how do you become a service center? How would I get a service center in my district, for example, is what I'm trying to find out. Because I'm a district that needs jobs greatly, like Doom and Gloom DeLoom, Representative Dallum.
Right.
He needs them too, but I need them worse.
The process at this point in time to become a service center, Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, would be pretty challenging because unless we got new state money and new federal money, then I would have to divide those two grants up 20 times or 21 times. So a more feasible route might be to go to one of the other centers that encompasses your district or your constituents and say, can we form a satellite center? And here's how we're going to put a business counselor out there or bring business classes or technical support to it. I think that'd be a more feasible approach to not create more overhead. But the process would be to engage my office and say, I need this type of technical support in this location, and start talking about it.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Okay. Representative Dell.
I have a question on funding. When we, at our center, Columbia Gorge Community College, we're faced with a bubble cut. I think I've said in this committee many times, the driver in our community is our community college. That's what picks up the economy. The governor's budget has given us a cut, and now the county is suffering. And our county participates in that program. That's Bob Cole's program.
Yes.
Is that unusual for a county to participate, or is that the norm?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Dolan, it's not unusual, but it's not the norm. I can think of several of the local service centers whose directors are quite entrepreneurial, like Mr. Bob Cole, and they have built relationships with many local entities, the counties, and sometimes it's other lottery money that comes back to the SBDC. It's a call of those local decision makers and people that run those organizations as to how they perceive the value of the program and the services. So, and I encourage that.
I will ask and be patient if you're going to cut it. Are there some things that we can do to ensure that our community action centers stay active? We're going to come to that.
I do have some recommendations.
Okay, good. Okay. I'll be patient. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Representative Buckley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Carter, I'm sure you keep track of what's happening at the federal level, too, since a good portion of the budget does come from Washington, D.C. Can you tell us what is currently proposed in front of Congress in terms of funding for the Small Business Administration?
Mr. Vice Chair and Representative Buckley, I can speak to the SBDC portion, the Small Business Development portion of the SBA budget, if that's what you want. They have asked Congress to level fund it at $88 million, and that's split up amongst the 66 centers. Senator Snow, who chairs the Senate Small Business Committee, has asked for, I believe it's 119, which brings the SBDC appropriation level with where it would be with inflation, because it's been level funded for 6 or 7 years, I think. And there's a possibility that we might get some more money, but there's a lot of things that compete with our federal budget, as you know.
Very good, thank you.
So if I could add one thing, Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Buckley, I did see a sheet of the SBA non-credit programs, the programs that are not loan-oriented types of programs, and out of approximately, and I can provide this, it's SBA material, but they did zero out about three-fourths of the technical assistance programs. They kept SCORE, which you've probably heard of. It's a service corps of retired executives. They kept the SBDCs, kept the Women's Business Centers, and a couple of other programs. And the intent is to consolidate those services into what they view as their premier or their lead technical assistance, to have fewer programs, invest their resources. So that's an overt intent, because it's in the budget at this point in time.
Very good. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question earlier, and I think I'm getting a sense of this. My question is going to be, how do people find out about the SBDCs and become a recipient of their help? But I think I'm getting a sense that it depends on which one we're talking about. There are 19 of them, and we talk about one head is very entrepreneurial, and I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it's very dependent on who's running that SBDC, how much they get out into the community and let themselves be known.
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Riley, I think you're right. That's one key component, the local leadership and their view of their mission on that local level. My job has often been referred to as managing a herd of cats. It's a very untraditional organization. It doesn't work from the top down like a lot of traditional organizations. When the SBDC network in Oregon was built out, it was a locally rooted program. It was meant to reflect those directors, those hosts, and it still has those characteristics, and that's a good thing, but it makes it tough to lead and to manage and to steer in new directions, although I think we're making some progress there. So some directors might be very focused just on business financing. Another director might be more focused on business training than another director. So the leadership is very important. One additional component is that often when I start to mention marketing the SBDCs, the local service center directors, they duck a little bit, because they don't necessarily want more people knocking on their doors, because they know they're at capacity, if not beyond. Their resources have been stretched. I'll give you an example. In this little piece that I have about proposed new investments, there's one paragraph. If you look at that paragraph, It's the last little staple handout that I've given you. It talks about how we've split each of those two grants up into 19 times. My recollection is that the SBA grant now pays for a 0.37 center director. So where does the balance of that time come to run the center?
Center director.
Well, what has happened, of course, is these center directors have taken on additional responsibilities. Sometimes it's related. They direct the workforce program at the college or the community ed program, but sometimes it's not. So that's, you know, we lose capacity, even though it looks like our funding is staying even, just because that FTE keeps shrinking year by year. The state portion, and the figure that I used there was, I think now the approximate value in terms of buying a business counselor, which is our premier service, is down to 0.6 or so. So the balance of the revenue for the SBDC has to come from the local level. If it's quote-unquote poor community college as opposed to one that is willing to put more into these types of programs, then they're going to have another full-time business counselor, and they might have a full-time center director. But they don't particularly, at this point in time, encourage me to have a massive marketing program, because their phones would go crazy, and it would be like a store with empty shelves of customers and no ability to meet their needs. So,
quick follow-up.
I
understand what you're saying about, you know, you've got more customers than you can handle, but it seems to me that maybe we should be looking more at marketing, because I don't think everyone knows this exists, and we may not be helping those people who need the help and who could succeed with the help as much as those people who just happen to know about it.
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Riley, I agree with you completely. In fact, in my proposed package, I put in a piece for marketing, and I've been encouraged to do that by a number of your colleagues.
So, Dr. Clark, could you give us a little better feel and flavor for what the marketing effort is now? Is it mostly done through chambers of commerce at the local level? How is it, and briefly, but how is it done right now?
Mr. Vice Chair, all of the marketing that occurs now occurs at the local level through brochures or pamphlets or flyers that advertise training and counseling, other community-oriented types of literature that the host, the college, might be putting out to their constituents. We have engaged about 18 months ago in a process of branding the biz centers. You know, we have a great logo. It's kind of our swoosh. You know, we call it the biz center. And we are trying to answer the phone the same way across the state. I know that the Metropolitan, there's three centers up in the Portland area. They are actually advertising their training classes in the same publication. And so, you know, there's certainly an effort to do it. But
how about affirmative outreach, though? However, once again, chambers of commerce, Rotary, what have you, or the director or an affiliate goes in and actually, that to me would have the most bang for the buck, where there's a captive room of small business people, that most direct value for the dollar. Is that being done? I'm sure it's ad hoc.
Mr. Vice Chair, I eat a lot of chicken.
Right.
So I go to a lot of Rotaries and do what I can. I know that the directors, you know, people like Bob Cole are very engaged. They're extraordinary professionals in the community, multi-talented people. They know their community as well. So I would say yes, there is that type of effort going on.
So, well, what about eating a lot of chicken?
Thank you. Any other questions on this line?
Mr.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you. Dr. Carter, can private colleges participate at Glenfield College?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm not sure. That question has been asked in another state, and I have not heard that it's been answered yet. I would think so. There's nothing in the federal regulations, in my view, that would suggest otherwise. It would start to go against tradition, and you might end up with some very enthusiastic hosts if we open that up. So,
just Just a quick follow-up, sure. Mr. Chair. Looking at your list here that Representative Buckley found for me of the 19, or however many.
Yes.
There's only at the end of, or next to the last page of the handouts. I'm just amazed that I don't see a University of Oregon or a OSU or a OHSU or any of those.
Mr. Vice Chair, is there a question?
Why not? I mean, what's happening? Where are these schools? I mean, one of them claims to be the best business school in the state, and it's not even on here.
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, you're absolutely right. In Oregon, Oregon was one of the first states that used community colleges as the hosts. And so it has that flavor. Many other state networks, they are hosted in the university system rather than in the community college system. The reason we do have three universities is in Klamath Falls, for example, there was not a community college when the SBDC network was formed, and so OIT was the natural choice. There was not a community college in La Grande. And so that's just the way. The attempt was to provide coverage to the state for these services.
So University of Oregon has never asked to be a part of this network?
Not during my tenure, Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
So. Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, I have had conversations with the Extension Service at OSU and Austin Family
Foundation,
yeah. The Ford Foundation. There's a lot of other organizations that we are connected with and that we try to complement our service set with theirs. So it's just because, and of course there's technology transfer offices at the major universities. I know that Mr. Jim Lindley, the Biz Center Director at Lane Community College, is very connected with the University of Oregon and that office.
Thank you. So.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Carr, jumping back a little bit to the marketing, but also the reality of the centers being at capacity, has there been any discussion of a payment method by clients of the centers, even along the lines of saying, once your business reaches a certain level of success, you would pay back the center a fee for the services it's provided as a way of helping to add the employees that looking further in your packet that you would like to add?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Buckley, there's constant discussion about that. I'm kind of got my hands tied because enabling federal legislation requires the counseling piece to be free and to be available to anybody that asks for it. So that's a key aspect of the philosophy of providing these services. There are some routes. I know some of the directors, they provide technical assistance and categorize a particular type of service in that area, and they might charge a nominal fee. In my view, it's a public investment. It's a partnership. And although it's been suggested by our host that it might become self-sustaining at some point in time, I don't see it. It's not a private organization. We can't run it like we do our private businesses. It does take an investment. The great thing about the investment, though, is that it does create jobs. Those jobs pay taxes, and there's some figures in here that you'll see that it actually returns considerably more every year to the general fund than it costs us. So did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, go ahead and continue, please.
Well, I want to give you a sense of the types of services that small businesses need and that the SBDCs have been providing. Mr. Chair, if I could draw your attention, there's an article called Why Small Businesses Fail. And and I'm not too keen on using that fail word. I'd rather have an article, and maybe I'll write one, that says why small businesses succeed. But if you look at that article and just walk through the list of typically why small businesses fail, you're going to see some pretty straightforward reasons. They don't plan. I own my own small corporation for 20 years. I worked long hours, had my head in the business, and it's hard to come up for air and get a strategic view or a long-term view. So we do a lot of business planning across the state of Oregon. On any given day of the week, there's 200 or 300 businesses talking to counselors in these 19 centers working specifically on their business plan. It's kind of a key part of the service, and it triggers some other things. Access to capital or undercapitalization is a key reason why some small businesses fail. And getting them ready so that they can package themselves, their records, their financials, so that they can go to a lender. They can go to the right type of lender, whether it's a private, public, guaranteed. Or now, of course, we need to find ways to get small businesses to venture capital people. A lot of the value of a small business now is in the intellectual property, so they don't have a building or machinery to capitalize their loans. Accounting, of course, is a big reason why small businesses fail. So a big part of our service set is not to do their accounting, but to really trigger with that small business person that they need to do accounting, and with that accounting, they will then have an ability to track their cash flow. So maybe we get them engaged in a training course at the community college. And by the way, they would pay for the course.
Right.
They would pay for the counseling, but they might pay a nominal fee for the training. Just not having somebody to mentor them or solve problems is another reason. Not doing a competitive market analysis is another reason businesses fail. Not having a marketing plan or understanding your customers. And these are typically not the skills or the knowledges that small entrepreneurs have. So what we're really doing is saying we have a set of expertise. You come to the table with your programming expertise or your fabrication expertise or your river rafting and guiding expertise. Let's help you with the business side of things until you get going. And that's what an SBDC counselor tries to do, is provide that type of assistance. So hopefully you'll see my article. It says Why Oregon Businesses Succeed, and it'll just list out all of the great things that the SBDCs do. So it's not all that we need to do. I think that our economy is changing. We need to examine the toolbox that we have available. We have new economy entrepreneurs that need assistance in protecting their intellectual property. I don't at the present have access to that type of expertise to provide to them. Whether they should license something, patent something, as part of their marketing plan. The non-equity financing is a particular type of lending expertise that I would like to have access to. So there's a range of what I call technology skills or knowledges that I'd like to have available in the toolbox for Oregon small businesses. The next piece is a handout that I have that has a series of graphs. And the first graph I want to bring to your attention is something called What Types of Businesses Are Served. It's often suggested that SBDCs work with mom and pops. And I guess I was a pop part of a mom and pop when I had my business. I had 15 employees, but it was a technology business. But we really do work with a broad range of Oregon businesses, and this gives you a sense. It's 25% are retail, 48% service, but work with wholesalers, manufacturers, construction, and other types of businesses. The next graph is a snapshot. Gives you some sense of the client demographics. You can see there that 12% of our clients are minorities, 9% are veterans, 49% are women, 66% are considered rural clients. Here's the next graph on page 6 of this handout. It has a blue and a red bar chart. It gives you last year's jobs creation, and I think Victoria is going to talk a little bit about this in just a moment when I finish. 3,600 jobs created according to an independent study that asked them. A lot of questions are asked about this study, but they're pretty defensible. Not only do we have last year's study, but we asked a group of people the year before and the year before that. There's another set of studies other than the Campbell DeLong called the Crispin studies that go back to the early 90s that demonstrate the same types of results. So at some point you kind of acquiesce and say, okay, there's enough evidence out there that it's a pretty significant program that does make a difference, does create some jobs. The next graph, I'll skip over this. I think Victoria has some information. New wages, increased sales. Here's the ROI one. So return on investment, it looks like this, a horizontal bar that suggests that $3.50 is returned to Oregon's general fund for each dollar that's invested. And I might point out as well that that is for each year that that new job continues to exist. So if the job exists for 5 or 8 or 10 years, you're going to get a return on that investment as well as return for each successive year that you continue to invest in the program. And then another question that I've been asked by your colleagues often is, well, what do your clients think of you? So I included in this handout a series of graphs about client rating of the quality of services, and you can see there that that generally on a 5-point scale they rate the quality of services as 4 or better, and that's been consistent over a number of years. Here's on page 10 the number of business customers counseling. Remember, we have a variety of services, so the free counseling is a portion of that. In 2003, 6,401 clients. You notice that we went down a little bit. We are getting stretched. And what is not on this graph is that the number of business counseling clients has been over 6,000 all the way back to 1992. So the question is, are we at a hinge point, you know, in this? Are we going to ratchet down the number of businesses that we can serve? So 6,000 clients is probably 2% or less of the total number of businesses that are in Oregon. And certainly, you know, with more resources, we could do more. And then the same information available for our training portion, the graph again about funding, and there's a graph in there about where we spend our money. I showed you where we get our money from, the three key sources, and this is one snapshot of where it goes. And then finally, the last piece, I just want to spend a minute on this, is proposed new investments for the SBDC network. And I call that expanded services. And I have an 8-point plan that said, if you were to invest more, this is how I'd spend the money. And I'd certainly be glad to provide you with an expanded version of this. We were writing out our plan for the impact that we think that this 8-point plan would have for a job growth in Oregon. So one last point before I turn over to Victoria is that I'd like to draw your attention to April 13th. All of the directors are coming to the Capitol. We'll have a small business day at the Capitol. And there's another hearing in front of the Trade and Economic Development Ways and Means Subcommittee on that day that will talk about some of the money aspects. So with that, Mr. Vice Chair, any questions?
Great. Thank you. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a clarification that I want to make, Mr. Carter, for benefit of the members, because this question has come up several times in the past. The Small Business Development Centers do charge for some of their programs, and members have wondered why that doesn't show up on the income graph here. Did you want to talk about that? I mean, I know the answer. I could explain it, but you might
On the next paragraph, right after that graph, I do talk about the training income that is charged, and that's averaged out at approximately $30,000. Jim, in terms of funding sources, the three primary partners, I didn't include it. For some of the SBDCs, for example, Guy Faust in at Oregon Coast Community College over in Lincoln City, Newport, I was visiting with him several months ago, and he says, when I took over the program, he says, I had this funding source, this one, and this one. And then he folded the pages out, and he says, and then I went to the commissioners, and I got this one. And then I went to this community program and got this one. And he folded it out three times, and I think he has 16 or 17 different funding sources now. So there's really no way for me to reflect, you know, their entrepreneurialism, you know, in that graph. So it was my choice just to include the three key partners, the hosts, the state, and the feds, in that particular graph.
The point that had been made was that the charges for the classes are tuition from the community college, so it doesn't go directly to the Small Business Development Center, so it is reflected in this yellow portion of the graph. Is that still true then?
Your question, Jim, is
the charges made for classes by the Small Business Development Center are actually college class charges that go to the college, not to the Small Business Development Center. It's been the previous explanation, and I'm asking if that is currently the case.
Mr. Vice Chair, Jim, my father's favorite answer to every question when I grew up with was, well, it depends, Bill. Some of the classes are under the auspices of the SBDCs, and the funding goes directly to them. So if they're going to teach a class, a three-hour workshop on going into business for $45, I would say that would probably go to them. However, if they are channeling people from the business community into a three-credit college course, even though it might be a weekend course or something like that, it's a credit type of course, then that would probably be channeled through normal community college, you know, income processes. So.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Carter, on the last page, which is 14 of 14, I don't know what this is. These statistics are based on. Are always like legends, even on financials. I'm amazed. I don't know how long. It says 91% of the SBDC clients are still in operation. I don't know if that means for 1 year or the 25 years you've been in business or what. I'm amazed. What I want to find out is what is the success rate since a huge 50% of small businesses appear to fail, depending on which economist you're talking with every year in the United States. Where is our comparison here of, you know, to me that's the proof in the pudding, that's the performance measurement, is businesses began over whenever this program began. You said the previous director was there 20 years, yes. And you've been there 23 years. I don't know when the program began. But how I'd just like to see that performance measurement.
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, I don't believe that this reflects the entire history of the program. I suspect it's a two-year period, or is this from the latest Campbell Long period? So it'd be a period of time probably, you know, somewhere back in the last year and then back a period of time, a year.
So 2 years?
2 years, probably.
91% that were started in the 2 years ago are still in operation. Is that correct?
Yeah. Victoria, do you want to answer?
Chairman Brun and Representative Nelson, Victoria Pruitt, Oregon Economic Community Development. To respond, we actually performed a survey and do this annually of all programs. And what we do is we look at the prior year, but oftentimes people received services or started businesses in a year reaching back from that. So extensively we look at 24 months prior for the survey.
Are you saying that these clients who began their businesses 2 years ago, not during the previous 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, 91% are still in operation?
From the ones that we surveyed, yes.
Is it, follow up, Ms. Chair, is it possible to get some more tenured statistics of the success of this program? It seems phenomenal, and you know, I'd like to encourage the continuation, expansion mm-hmm. of the program, but I'd sure like to know over the past 25 years, you know, how many are still in business from day one, and you know, which ones have grown, and what's been the productivity, how much have they contributed to the state economy. Oh, good, here comes someone who knows.
Right.
Committee members, my name is Ron Fox. I manage the Business Development Division for the Oregon Economic Community Development Department, and I only get to come up here because I happen to have the senior most memory among the three people at the table. Chairman Brune, Representative Nelson, we currently do not conduct what Bill and I have discussed as a longitudinal study of small business clients served by our various service providers. In fact, we spoke just a couple of days ago about how we might do that, what statistical analysis method we would use to reach back in time, because what we can present to you is a series small businesses that receive service from those programs as well as other small business service providers that we contract with. But it's, as I was just describing to Bill the other day, it is a series of Polaroids, a picture taken at a point in time with each individual business. What we'd like to have is some statistics that would represent more of a movie, a movement in time for each individual business. So if they received service from Bill's centers 3 years ago, and immediately following that service, they reported their successes, jobs added, sales increased. If we were to go back to that business 24, 36, maybe 60 months later, what kind of a picture would we get? So we do not have those statistical information and really can't provide it, but we are in discussions about how that would happen in the hopes that we can use that information to more effectively plan and apply the services that are provided to small business.
Thank you.
Is that responsive to you?
Okay.
Representative
Black. Rightfully so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quick. Do you have a listing of all the businesses that have been served by each of the districts?
Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Riley, we have a management information system that has businesses back a number of years. I don't know how many years in arrears we could get that data, probably several. We do have an issue, though, in using that information. The entree to a business is that this counseling is confidential, and the counselors and the center directors take it very, very seriously. So we would need to have a release from a business to identify them as a candidate. Now, when it's in the aggregate, you know, we can look at them, but we can't identify them specifically.
When you say that when you tell them that the counseling is confidential, it's confidential that they even came to you. Is that what you're telling me?
That's correct.
Hmm. Yes. Representative Dallin.
Somewhat along the same lines, Representative Nelson used the term a 50% failure rate in business, and I believe between my colleagues Riley and Nelson, they dug out most of what I wanted to know. But is that 50% failure rate accurate, and over what period of time does that take, if it's accurate?
Vice Chair Brune, Representative Dallum, we within the department do not gather or complete statistics on that. I think if Bill and I were to go about and sort of survey the national information, we would find indications that one out of five small businesses fail or close. And there's a great deal of difference between failure and closing, because sometimes they close the business, go on to do other things, the business is gone, but it's not a failure as in financially they were unable to succeed. Those numbers also vary greatly within the sector of business that an individual small business is associated with. And again, I'm recalling from memory that one of the more dangerous sectors of the service economy or retail economy is restaurants, as an example. So restaurants have a higher percentage of I'm going to use the word failure, where their business closes, than other sectors. But we do not currently track that data. We can pull some national data for you that would give an indication, but I don't know that we have anything that's tracked here in Oregon in a way that would give you an indication that businesses fail at a rate of 1 out of 5, 1 out of 6. I would like to say that in reference to the question that was asked previously, the figures that Bill provides in here, that 91% of the businesses that were surveyed in our most recent survey, so those businesses were assisted by the Small Business Center. When they were surveyed subsequently, they were still in business. So it's a relatively short period of time, but it doesn't reflect the longer-term duration of their success.
I suppose the answer is it depends. I think that's a fair answer. It depends. Are you talking about restaurants or milling? I would like to draw your attention to this brochure, second page. We've all been there. We visited Steve Gerhardt and his company on our trip to the Dalles, all except for two of us. Then, for one of us that wasn't there, at that meeting, you talked about building a second center in the Dalles, and we would trade that for an armory from the chairman of the military committee.
Representative Dalem, I just wanted to clarify which House district this was. Just
House District 59.
Okay, thank you. I had forgotten that temporarily. Are there any other questions along that line? Okay, Victoria.
Thank you.
I didn't say anything. Any trade?
Vice Chair Brun, committee. Hello. Victoria Pruitt with the Oregon Economic and Community Development. What I'd like to present and what Aaron is handing out to you today is the results of the third survey that we've done, which is a small business program survey and assessment. What we do is we go out and survey people that have been assisted by the SBDCs as well as other targeted service providers that deal with small business, minority, and women businesses. The survey also happened to cover our loan programs. That's not covered within here, but at the end of this, I'll refer you to where you can actually view the whole survey online if you want to get more detailed information. So with that, the purpose of the survey and the survey goal is to gather primary data about the impact of the small business programs that are supported by the OECDD. And as I said, we do it based on a fiscal year, and this was the third one that's been performed. In the inside page, page 2, I essentially set out the SBDCs and the other targeted service providers who are part of the survey. And I think I've quoted the universities and the locations correctly. So there are three universities that are involved, Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and OIT in Klamath Falls, the 16 community colleges statewide, and then the Small Business International Trade Office at Portland Community. The other targeted providers have specialties, as I mentioned, that target women and minorities, and also other specialties like OMEP, which is the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. They're strategically focused on lean manufacturing, and so there's some very specialized groups that we also support that are very targeted for small businesses. The survey base for SBDCs and the other targeted providers, there were 5,573 clients assisted in the fiscal year of 03 to 04. The sample size we went for was 10%, and we felt that that was statistically sound, and that's what we based the results on. 1,000 people were contacted, 80% of those people chose to participate, and approximately 69% of those completed the survey. Worst case reliability is in our understanding from Campbell DeLong and their reporting to us, is essentially a plus or minus 4%. So we felt that that percentage was a good one and solid enough for our statistical reporting. The size of businesses served for the SBDCs, what we found as a result of the survey was that 70% of the businesses served had fewer than 10 employees, and 67% of those had less than 5. For the targeted providers, that actually was slightly higher. 73% of those served less than 10%, but 30% of those had 6 to 10, and 17% of those businesses had 11 or more employees. And based on the specialty of those targeted service providers, you'll find that some of their numbers skew slightly different than where the SBDCs target, and that'll be shown as we go through some of the information here. And I'm going to invite Bill to chime in at any point where he sees an opportunity to support, and then also some of his graphs that he provided in his materials pretty much support the written stuff that you're receiving here. Salaries were frequently less than $25,000 per FTE. Many of the businesses, if you recall, were less than 10 employees and many less than 5. For SBDCs, the majority, being 58%, fell under the $25,000 a year category. 20% were into the 25 to essentially 35,000, and 9% were in the higher category of 35,000 to 55. The targeted providers skewed slightly higher than that as far as average income, with a larger percentage falling into the 25 to 35,000 and then also into the 35 and 55. And I believe that that skews a little bit more towards the manufacturing side and some of the other specialty groups that are being serviced there. All the clients gave high marks for services that they received, and actually one of the graphs that Bill had provided reflected this, and that's all of them were close to 4 or above 4, which on a scale of 1 to 5 we saw as being very significant. They also were comparable with prior years, and if you're inclined to go out and look at the survey online, there is comparison to prior year information. The top tier, as far as services that were ranked by businesses, were the business plan, the marketing plan, and accounting assistance, which essentially dovetails what Bill reported earlier. The second tier of needs that they gave services for were referrals and opportunities, human resources and training, and then product development. Where businesses said that they needed help, from the SBDC group that we surveyed, locating loans and financial assistance was one of the key things. Product development and manufacturing expertise, as well as computer technical assistance. For the targeted provider group, business plan development, computer technology, government contracting assistance, which there is one provider who is very specialized, and that's GCAP, that just assists with government contracts, direct loans, and market plan development. Almost half of the SBDC businesses were in startup phase. Compared to prior surveys, you'll note that for 2003-04, it was a much higher percentage, 47%, compared to prior years of 26 and 27. Businesses tended to need help with business and marketing plans regardless of how long they had been in operation. Other providers tended to be more successful at serving minority-owned businesses. That doesn't come as a surprise. The SBDCs blanket the state. They help a large number of businesses across the state, and the minority and other service providers tend to have specific targets. Two of them are targeted towards Hispanic. A couple are in the Portland area that also target minority businesses.
Victoria, can you pop a question on that? Of the minority women-owned, those sorts, is the number that the centers are serving, is it representative of the census, of the larger census, or is it less than what is representative in the state of Oregon, or do you have data to address that?
Chairman Brun, to respond, and if Ron or Bill want to add, I believe we have statistics that we could bring that would show that. I believe that it probably represents, you know, fairly a cross-section of the state.
Vice Chairman Gruen, members of the committee, I think the Small Business Development Centers serve at or very close to the percent of minority business ownership in their regions. The target service providers that we contract with at the direction of the legislature are actually service providers whose service delivery is directly targeted to reach out to minority and women-owned businesses or minority and women-owned entrepreneurs who are in that early startup phase. So as Victoria mentioned, the statistics that we represent here are larger, but that's exactly the outcome that we intend to achieve by targeting our service procurement.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fox, which of these, on page two, the targeted providers that you contract with, do you contract with them or does Dr. Carter contract with them?
No. Vice Chair Broom, Representative Nelson, the department contracts with these service providers in a request for proposals, an RFP solicitation, and we use a committee of knowledgeable small business service and small business people to select those service providers with the purpose of meeting the direction given by the legislation for our efforts to target services to minority and women-owned businesses in Oregon. So we contract with these organizations separate from the funding that we provide to the Small Business Development Center Network.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Of these targeted providers, who's the most successful?
Vice Chair of Room, Representative Nelson, I'm going to take a cut at and let Victoria, who's probably studied the survey results more closely, I'd like to first offer Bill's father's answer. It depends, because each of these service providers have sort of a unique service package that they provide to small business. And I would, a couple of examples, GCAP, as mentioned previously at Victoria, Rick Evans, who runs that program, he gets federal funding to assist small minority and women-owned business with successful local, state, and federal contract procurement and vendor supply. So, in a sense, that's the niche of their services, to actually help small business get a larger percentage of the contracting and vending the purchases made by local, state, and particularly federal agencies. The Housing Development Center, as an example, works primarily with minority contractors in the Portland metropolitan area to improve their success at achieving either components of or an entire construction contract for either residential or commercial building contracts. So each of them have a different set. I would say our results generally indicate that they are all successful in meeting the basic fundamentals of the performance contract that we have in place with each of these organizations, that which would be also true of the small business centers as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Which one, Bradley, comes to mind that you'd like to suggest has been incredibly successful?
Vice Chair Brewer.
I don't want the next question.
Representative Nelson.
You better tell me here, Mr. Clark.
Yeah, right, I'll tell you. I guess I would say that each one of these service providers.
Oh, dear. Mr. Chair.
I'll get to your answer here just briefly. I think it's been very, very successful in the range of services that they have are contracted with to deliver to small business. The one on this list that I am most enthusiastic about and think has the great prospect for Oregon small business is the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, OMEP. And the reason I point that out is that that service, which basically assists small businesses with the application of lean manufacturing techniques. If you recall, Toyota Motor Company sort of invented this Kaizen, this continuous improvement of production that's been That's become almost an institutional approach now, and is OMEP using federal funding, state funding, and actual fees paid by the business actually assist individual businesses with both the analysis and the application, and to some degree the institutional training of employees into that form of manufacturing approach. And I guess the example that I might quote is Marquis Spas, which is located in Independence. OMEP helped that firm to analyze their production processes. They had anticipated expanding their production footprint by building a larger building. After the application of lean manufacturing technology, the company discovered that they could actually ramp up substantially the production within their existing facility, so they avoided that additional capital cost, which would have had been funded by portions of their profits. So that's one example of how that helps businesses.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Any more questions? Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you. To continue on, other providers also appear to have a greater impact on increasing sales and productivity. Again, I'm going to couch that and say these are very targeted providers. I believe that the SBDCs do a thorough job in what they do, but when you look at, for example, OMEP, which Ron just referenced, they're dealing with a higher-end productivity level, higher-end salaries, higher-end margins all across the board than where the SBDCs, you know, are essentially working and supporting businesses of 10 employees or less. Services reflect substantial impact on small businesses, and this was overall. 50% of the people that we surveyed gave credit to services for helping them develop new products. Over 60% opened new businesses, and approximately 60% reduced their operating expenses. 28% reported on average a profitability increase overall for their businesses. The small business report reported increased sales as a result of services. The SBDCs, out of 648 businesses, they reported an increase on average of $60,612, and if you multiply that out, it's close to $39 million. For the targeted providers, out of the 87 businesses that we polled and spoke to, with an average increase of approximately $114, it factors out to almost $10 million. So the increased average reported was actually greater than $49 million in total, and that was just for the group that we surveyed, and that was a 10% sample. So small business programs were credited with creating more than 3,300 new jobs. Full-time positions that were reported out of the sample that we took was over 3,000, and then the part-time jobs were 781. The wages for those jobs created based on the averages of 25,000 and then also scaled based on the survey that we took came to over $72 million. And what I'd like to do in conclusion is essentially refer you to the Governor's Small Business Council website. And on the homepage of that site, you can actually click through, and the survey in its entirety is located there, so you can read it and look at some of the comparisons for yourself, and certainly ask questions of us when you get to that stage, if that's something you're inclined to do. Separate from the results of the survey, two-thirds of the CDD visits to companies by its business development officers are to small businesses statewide, and the majority of business financial assistance and support goes to businesses with fewer than 100 employees. So overall for the state, we're trying to essentially address the different segments that are out there. If the SBDCs are targeting for those businesses that may be 20 or less, 10 or less, we're also out there trying to fill in that gap to support the other businesses. By supporting the SBDCs and the other targeted service providers through our programs, we strive to ensure that the needs of small businesses in Oregon are met. We had one other additional sheet that I wanted to present and go over, which kind of generally looks at OECDD and how we support small businesses. This actually was part of the Ways and Means presentation. And there's some highlighted points there with over 5,590 small businesses that received services. And OECDD small business service providers helped to create and retain the 3,800 jobs, which is part of the statistics I just gave. As far as budget for information to the committee. The governor's recommended budget is at $3.25 million. The small business development centers are slated in that for $2.2 million, which is holding them solid. And women and minority businesses, which is the targeted service providers, is $900,000. And then business retention services are listed for $150,000. And if there are any questions, we'd be happy to take them at this point.
All right, thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson?
I'm just curious, from all of you, those of us who've operated businesses for years, not necessarily new businesses, but can we access these services even if we're not new businesses, even if I had 201 employees and I'm in manufacturing? I don't know who came up with the arbitrary 200 employees and you're cut off.
It's me.
Vice Chair Byrne, Representative Nelson, the legislature did in a previous...
But we need to change it.
And just let me... The federal government, as you know, uses a 500 or fewer employees or less than 500 employees as a definition of small business. In the statute, the legislature has defined small business really in two ways. Small business in a manufacturing sector is 200. All other sectors is at 50. So it...
Why did we... Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Do you know why, Mr. Fox, that we did something so stupid?
Vice Chair Bruin, Representative Nelson, I didn't answer that question effectively for you. Now I've actually forgot the full question.
I just wonder why we didn't stick with the federal definition of 500.
Vice Chair Bruin, Representative Nelson, that was put in the statutes many sessions ago.
Oh, good.
My memory recalls.
Before me, yeah.
And it does cause us, when we use federally provided data and try to link that up to our own references, in terms of you get a report that says Oregon has 300,000 small businesses, and then using our state definition, that number is less, and we spend a good deal of time trying to figure out how to interpret that difference. But it goes back, well, I've been involved since about three sessions ago, so it goes back to preceding that.
Before me, too, I came with you. Mr.
Yes,
Chair,
yes.
Perhaps we could sponsor a committee bill to change that up to the 500.
Appreciate that. We'll certainly take that up with the chair. I'd like to follow on that line of questioning. Why are we, well, I should ask, is there any revenue component to our definition and termination of small business, or are we solely targeted on employee size? To me, that seems, maybe it's a component, but solely basing on employee size may be arbitrary. My background is that we base a business by its revenue size.
Vice Chair Byrne, the legislation currently just has reference to employment size, so there is no differentiation between a business that has 300 employees and produces an equivalent amount of gross revenue as a business that might produce revenue in excess of that with 50 employees. So it's just an employment numerical base. I'm going to suppose that since the federal government set their 500 or less definition, the state used a similar metric of using just an employment number in the history. Bill might actually use, of course, federal numbers.
Well, Mr. Vice Chair, if I could come back to the question about services. I mean, the statistics are important, and in fact, for every statistics, you can say you can find an exception for it. The $24,000 is below family living wage, for example, but in Heppner, that's a pretty good job, as it is in most small communities around Oregon. So, you know, I mean, I think we need to look at the statistics to get a sense of the program, but on the street, you know, why businesses fail, the services, do they make a difference? Absolutely. Are they available? and what services, and that's the proposition really that I bring, is that if you want to reshape this program so that it has different services, targets differently, has different access points, different service centers, then that's a discussion that we should have, just like when we run our businesses. That's something that we do every day when we go to work, is say, who are my customers, what are my core services or products, and how do I keep everybody happy and make a profit. So, I'm an architect for this organization with your help, with your policy guidance, and I think that question needs to be visited. I'll just give you an example. In a number of states, a lot of these other providers, government contracting assistance, manufacturing, lean manufacturing assistance, are integrated into the SBDC toolbox. They're part of the package. Well, it makes sense to do that, and that's probably easier than it is trying to build collaborative relationships. But in Oregon, what I inherited was other agencies that do that, so I'm working as hard as I can to improve and to lift capacity through strengthening collaborations. That's what I have to work with. So, I'm open to the question. Did I?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Follow up?
Yes. Would it be possible, we could ask Pretoria and Mr. Fox as well, yourself, to give us some data on what other states are doing like this integration? I'm from Texas, and I just imagine there's a different format there, I believe. But I think it would be interested and also to know, how successful they've been. And of course, I would be concerned with this 500 rule, but I know there are a lot of that size businesses needing help, and there's minimal help. Of course, the senior retired professionals are great, but just looking at this data, I'm just wondering, why we don't offer that. Like the governor says, jobs, begin with, primarily in this state, with small businesses that's built them up, and those that are at a plateau. We have so many, just been at the same level for so long with good guidance, stimulating business plans, marketing techniques. We could grow this economy to be, the finest in the nation. But I'd be interested in which states you think our program might learn from, and y'all recommend how our program could be adapted to better serve more businesses and more successfully without all the paperwork, with all these clients partners you have to contract with. Thank you.
Yeah, Vice Chair, Room Representative Nelson, I guess what I would like to propose is that we will work with Bill. Bill has a great deal of information because of his familiarity with the National Small Business Development Center, and we can merge that information and give you an indication of how some other states approach it and how they are viewing or valuing that integrated approach. Because I do agree with Bill, and it's an issue we struggle with regularly. In fact, we require in our contracts with the targeted service providers, we require that they document and demonstrate to us that they do collaborate and coordinate their services with the small business centers. But that doesn't necessarily answer your full question.
Yes, Vice Chair Brune, and the committee, I would like to do a follow-up to your prior question addressing revenues. One of the things we try to get to in the survey, and you'll notice there are questions that pertain to sales. And what we found is that of the businesses we surveyed, they fairly thoroughly underreported sales. I mean, if you looked at the number of jobs they reported and the employees they had to support to do that, the sales were far less than what their payroll would have been. So try and get a revenue number. Divulging sales information wasn't something we were able to get out of people.
I just heard a ching-ching from the
So we made an assumption based on the survey that they had increased sales at least by the amount of payroll and employees that they reported that they'd added.
Thank you for that. Representative Wiley?
Thank you. I actually just have a comment, and that is that what I've heard is that we are maybe bumping up against the maximum that we can support, and that may be a reason why we limit the size of the companies we support. Those companies that we support, I think, need to be the ones who need it the most. Mm-hmm. And in addition, have the most likely chance of success. I think that that's where we need to concentrate, is those folks who we can actually help to succeed. And maybe that's where those numbers came from.
Mr. Vice Chair, if I could respond.
Yes.
I agree with you that moving towards a more targeted approach, you know, which businesses are going to create the biggest outcome as we define outcome, is pretty important. There's a lot of focus on new economy, innovation, technology types of companies. Some of the SBDC networks around the country have tooled up. You know, they have repositioned and retooled the service set in order to specifically serve those targeted industries. So, and they are getting more bang for the buck as a consequence. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right. Any further questions?
Just one question. Thank you for being here today. In light of our new, as I said, I think it's the most incredible contribution to business we've done in this legislature, and I think it's going to remain that way. Our e-commerce zones we approved for every enterprise zone in the state now. This is a perfect example, Dr. Carter. These enterprise zones need help right now. They do not know how to go about getting, clients, marketing their product. Other than the DALs, the rest of us are pretty dumb. And we, when it comes to this, and since you're already experienced with the e-commerce zones that have been businesses, I guess I should better say, that have been formed right now, I don't know who they go to. Who do these counties go to for help? And here's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. I mean, to build this, and so they'll be very successful, like Representative Riley says, and, put our dollars where we, I was going to say where our mouth was, but, we promoted it, but now we need to be sure that they have the help, in developing the businesses, bringing them in, developing the marketing plans beyond what economic development's been doing and creating that huge binder, about the land and all that stuff, permits and all that, which we need. But now I'm talking about the actual business. So I think that's important that we have people, advisors. I want to know who I can tell these people to go to when the governor signs that great new bill allowing everybody to have an e-commerce zone.
Mr. Vice Chair, may I respond? Mr. Vice Chair, Representative Nelson, as you were speaking, I'm thinking about some issues that have come up recently. Just last week, I was called by the director of the State Fair, and was, can you help me write a business plan, particularly for the expo-related business? And I'm trying to find a way. I'm kind of, again, tied by some federal guidelines that say it needs to be a private entity in order for me to bring these resources to bear. It doesn't mean that this body couldn't find some help to use that same expertise for a state organization, state entity that needed business planning, market planning, or some private nonprofit. For example, we were asked just a month or so ago by a YMCA to help them do the same thing. Okay. Would you help us put our business plan together, our marketing plan? And that's a very important service. It's the same skills and knowledge. So right now I don't have a clear-cut answer on how to do that, but it is a need out there, and we do have expertise that we could bring to bear on that if we could find a way to do it. So,
Mr. Chair, can I just one last quick one? I've lost it. Never mind.
Okay.
Oh, it was so important.
I want to thank the three of you very much. It was excellent testimony. I think we learned a lot. And
Mr. Chair, before you say, I remembered it.
All right.
Sorry. Well,
yes, no, it's okay. Representative Nelson.
Yes, if we increase this package to be a service available to more businesses, maybe businesses hiring more individuals, would we get more federal money? Is that based on how many clients we be serving? Would our pot get bigger from the feds?
Probably not. Vice Chair. So we get a match. One to one. But just let me put a caveat there. I am trying hard to use this program to put together some pilots on a national level. I've approached our delegation about what I call the ESBDC, why not deliver counseling training and that sort of thing, do that as a national pilot. I think that we could easily position ourselves as the one out of the 66 that is innovative and doing things, and that would bring in federal funds.
And that fits the, Mr. Chair, that fits the e-commerce zones very well.
Yeah. Excellent. Again, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here and wish you continued good luck and success. That ends the invited testimony session of the hearing. Real quickly before we go, just a couple of announcements. We have no meeting scheduled for Friday or Monday. As I think everybody knows, our good chair is on an overseas trip, and we wish him Godspeed on that trip. And we will meet again here Wednesday the 30th, bright and early. So with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
April 1st, we're